Oh, hello there. It's the Bell and Edit. I'm Monty Ashley.
I'm Rhys Hall.
It is a very exciting week.
Yes, so many shows are coming to an end.
Now, for people with normal viewing habits, the beginning of fall means new television shows. Our old favorites are back. Ooh, who are these cops going to arrest? How young is young Sheldon? You know, questions like that.
Yeah, but for geezers, for sad old geezers like us...
We are happy old geezers.
For happy old geezers like us, this is a sad time of year because it means all of the shows that we normally watch are going away.
Yes, because only popular shows can be shown in the fall, and that does not necessarily cover the kind of shows we are watching.
It definitely does not cover the kind of shows we watch.
So we actually have two season finales to knock out today, and I am so excited about it. Here we go. Number one, Ink Master. It is the season finale of Ink Master. We're going to crown a winner and going to be done with this stupid season. And the first thing I want to say, we were worried how it was going to start because in a previous season, the first thing you saw was Dave Navarro hanging from hooks.
Yes. In a, from his, through his back, in a suspension thing that you do.
Which.
If you're Dave Navarro.
Yeah. I don't mind somebody doing that. I feel it's very performative for Dave Navarro to do that.
Aw, poor little Davey. He can't weigh more than a feather.
So, this time, he was playing the national anthem, like Jimi
Hendrix. On an electric guitar on the roof, on the outside, the... On top of the marquee of the building they were recording.
Yeah, you know.
He was outdoors playing the national anthem on the guitar.
To remind us that this isn't his day job. He's got a real gig.
Right.
Where it's something he's actually good at. What I enjoy.
I think he's pretty good at hosting this show, actually.
Do you?
I do. I think he
even after tonight.
Quickly. Well, I think he recovers quickly. And I think that's an important skill.
Well, what happened, I don't know if you've seen the news. People are kneeling when the national anthem is played. And everybody is very angry at the NFL for this.
Well, some people are
very
angry at the NFL. Because it's NFL players who are doing it.
Right. Now, because somebody was playing the national anthem, and this was a live show, some of the contestants were kneeling instead of standing.
I don't have a problem with that.
I was delighted to see it. That made it feel like somebody was taking some aspect of this show seriously.
It made me feel like the show was actually happening now.
Yeah.
It squarely placed it within the current time frame.
I will say it was the African-American and only the African-American contestants who were kneeling.
That kind of annoyed me, but these guys are all... Everybody's a jerk on this show, so I shouldn't be that surprised.
And anyway, I liked it because it was unexpected. Like, something... It made the show feel sort of relevant for a moment.
Yes.
Like, there are not people picketing Ink Master. Nobody's writing angry editorials about Ink Master. But the things they are writing angry editorials about were also happening on Ink Master. Anyway,
right.
After that happened, Chris Nunez and Oliver Peck really praised Dave Navarro's guitar playing up and down.
They did. They were so amazed. It's like they didn't know he could do that. They thought he was just a host of a TV show. And here they go, finding out he has this whole hidden skill set. It's amazing.
It felt contractually obligated to me.
That's kind of what I was saying.
So the way the layout was, three people are being tattooed up on top of the stage.
Right, then, those are your live six-hour tattoos.
And then sort of facing the stage, like they are the American Idol judges, were Navarro, Peck, and Nunez. And then behind them was the audience, who I think had been given a lot of alcohol.
That was a really noisy audience, and they had should never have been mic'd.
The audio, as always with live Ink Master finales, was just terrible.
It was really bad.
Every time somebody started to speak,
the audience would get noisy, and then they could no one could hear what they were saying.
And the everybody's first sentence was inaudible anyway, because the audio people weren't ready for that person to speak. Even if one of the judges had just spoken and now another judge speaks, there's a moment where you can almost hear somebody saying, "Oh, put the microphone at him now." And because this is Ink Master, they did have a little, you know, reunion aspect where they tried to go over some of the hostilities that happened in the season. So we got, you know, person A shouting at person B shouting at person A.
Then we just fast-forwarded through that, because we have heard enough shouting from this show. Thank you very much.
And I want to be clear, they were all shouting at the same time, and also the audience is shouting the whole time.
Yeah.
It wasn't even good Jerry Springering.
No, it wasn't.
So, let us get to the live tattoos, which, these are six-hour tattoos.
Right, there are three competing shops. There is Old Town Ink.
That's DJ and Bubba.
There is Black Cobra.
That is Katie and somebody.
And there is Basilica.
That is Christian and his friend.
Yes. We're getting better. We at least know the name of one person on each team now.
Christian's friend is the one I can't tell apart from Bubba. Old Town Ink did a three-eyed wolf.
I'm not sure why you would do a three-eyed wolf, but it's very...
Their explanation was that they wanted to do something they hadn't done before, which I don't know if that's...
Is that a good strategy on a competition show, to try something you've never done before? Shouldn't you stick to what you know in order to do it at your best ability?
It's not enough of a justification on its own, I don't feel like. Like, you should also have a reason why you did this thing you haven't done before.
As three-eyed wolves go, it is a three-eyed wolf. It is snarling.
Fair.
It has a red and yellow background, and it's got three eyes, and they're yellow.
Black Cobra did a mandala, which I really liked.
It was one of my favorite pieces that they have ever done. It is a gorgeous mandala in purple and aqua and blue, and then it's got some fall leaves poking out around the edges.
Yeah, it's super vibrant and very geometrical. I don't know exactly what makes a good mandala, but I like looking at this one.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and I like it.
Oh, dang. And Basilica made what was supposed to be God forming Adam out of clay.
But it looks more like... Okay, well, there's a couple of hands. There's Adam. He's kind of being sculpted around by the hands. But there's nothing there that says clay to me. It looks like smoke and fog blowing around. Also, Adam looks a lot like Sting in Dune.
I think Adam looks a lot like Sting in Brimstone and Treacle.
Oh, well...
So, as you can see, we are sharply divided.
Sharply divided.
Now, at this point is where the people at home started voting.
Right, because you have to vote on the three tattoos, and then...
One of the three teams will be sent forward to the top two, and the judges will pick the other one.
Would you like to explain why this is a flawed idea?
Just like with the jury of your peers, it doesn't mean anything. If the judges like a team, they are going to put them in the top two. If the judges don't like a team, and the people voting put them in the top two, it doesn't matter because the judges like the other team. Also, to vote, you had to tweet using a team's hashtag, and that would mean tweeting that you were watching the Ink Master finale live. And we have a podcast in which we talk about the Ink Master finale, and even we were not live tweeting the Ink Master finale.
No, it would have been embarrassing. Also, we weren't home when it aired.
Yeah. So, the next thing people were looking at was the 35-hour black and gray tattoo. Each team did two 35-hour full back tattoos, one black and gray, one full color. How would you like to describe the black and gray tattoos?
All right. So, the first black and gray tattoo I would like to describe was by Basilica. Basilica's tattoo is of... Lilith,
Adam's first wife. I'm not sure of her biblical standing, which means you are free to make up whatever other story you like about her.
And the story they made up is boobies.
Yes. Lilith has giant boobies.
And she's very beautifully drawn, and she has an owl and some little devil babies peeking around her, but it's very much a comic book version of a naked lady.
The judges only wanted to talk about the owl. It is a good-looking owl.
The owl is beautifully drawn that is trying to land on her finger.
The boobies...
You can't land an owl on your finger. Owls are too big for that.
The boobies reminded me a great deal of first edition D&D artwork.
Oh, yeah. You're right. That's absolutely what you're looking at here. So the next team whose black and gray art we got to see was... Old Town Ink, their black and gray master canvas was, well, it's hard to describe. It was a...
It's a giant face.
It's a giant face. I think maybe the original drawing they used might have been Lady Gaga, but it also looks like a friend of mine's wife.
It's zoomed in so far, there's just the eyes, nose, and mouth. There's no real hairstyle. There's no ears. I would not be able to tell this apart from anyone. This is my favorite tattoo of the evening because it is so unsettling.
It is really unsettling. It's a photorealistic face with an eye on each, around each shoulder blade.
Like, you could recognize, I don't know if you'd recognize this, but you would see this face blocks away if this guy had his shirt off.
And it would be alarming.
Yeah.
In a good way, because it's a beautifully done tattoo. This guy can go to the tattoo expo, and he can show that off with no shame, because it's a really well done tattoo. But it's kind of creepy looking.
I like that. I at least have a... I have an emotional response to this. Admittedly, that response is, ah! But it's something.
Now, Black Cobra decided that for their black and gray tattoos, for their black and gray and color tattoo, they wanted to do tattoos that were in the same style so that it showed, so that it looked like they were both done by the same artist to show cohesiveness. And they did two birds. Their black and gray piece is an owl.
It's carrying a torch.
Carrying a lantern.
Yeah.
I don't know why the owl is carrying the lantern. I've heard that they can see pretty well in the dark.
Yep.
But it's a beautiful piece.
It doesn't read as well as some of the others because
there's some filigree that comes off one of the wing tips that looks like maybe it's the wing curling up there when the wing actually is going down.
Yeah. But there's a lot of ink on this guy.
There's a lot of ink, and there's beauty, and the shading is gorgeous, and the illustration is gorgeous. I really like this tattoo.
I like the expression on the owl's face. He's kind of going,
happy.
Howdy, how you doing? I like this guy.
Yeah.
So.
Those are the black and white, the black and gray pieces.
At this point, the voting continued, and now people are supposed to be voting on some criteria that combines the live tattoo and the black and gray tattoo.
I'm not sure about that. What that was.
People voted for Black Cobra.
Black Cobra.
So that means Black Cobra is one of the top two. Now the judges have to decide between Old Town Ink and Basilica. They chose Old Town Ink.
Right. Based on the black and white art.
Yeah.
Are we going to talk about the color art also?
Yes, but first I want to say, Christian was exactly the right amount of disappointed.
Yeah, he was.
He gave everybody hugs, cursed at them. I don't want to use the explicit tag on this episode, so I'll say,
he said the F word.
As he hugged them, he's like, F you, F you. And we were only reading his lips, but it seemed like good-natured sour grapes.
As opposed to what you get with your...
What you get with, like, Made Rich.
Or Made Rich, who are just seriously angry that the judges can't see their perfect brilliance.
Yeah.
He seemed like he was being good about being voted off.
I'm certain Christian is still very angry he didn't win, but he was not a huge poor sport on camera, and at this point I will take what I can get out of this show. Before they left, we did get to see Basilica's full-color tattoo. That was Eve.
That was Eve. It kind of goes with their Ladies of the Bible theme. It's a blonde lady in a flower crown holding an apple, and a snake is... These guys do not know what snake jaws look like, do they?
Yeah. Also,
a snake is circling around her. It's got big fangs. It looks like it's about to snap at her boob, but at least her boobs are hidden because she's Eve, so I guess that's a thing.
That doesn't make any sense. She didn't hide her boobs until after she ate of the fruit of knowledge.
Well...
And here's what I have to say about snakes. Everybody on Ink Master thinks that snakes are all two-toned, one color on the top, and then a brightly colored belly that sharply contrasts. Not all snakes look like that, and if a snake is wrapped around something, its belly is probably facing the thing it's wrapping.
It's not just hanging out there being a snake belly. Snakes hold their bellies close because they got those grabby things.
Yeah, that's
them.
How they grab. It's a lot of times you'll see a snake in a tattoo holding onto something with its back, and that is not how snakes work. There's not a lot to understand about snakes, but it seems like these How can you be a great tattoo artist and not know how snakes work? It's like not knowing how skulls or daggers or flames work, or Tweety Bird.
But actually, the judges said that this was the best snake they had ever seen in this competition. Or that's what Oliver Peck said, and I was...
It's
a very nice looking snake, but that's not how it works.
I respect Oliver Peck's opinion on tattoo application. Like, if he says a line is bad or the ink has gone in wrong, I think he is... I'm going to shut up and I'm going to take whatever he says as gospel. I don't think he's a herpetologist. Also, he was not wearing a shirt. And I just want to throw that out there. So,
hey, it takes a lot of nerve not to wear a shirt when you've just had some kind of heart surgery.
That is a good point, actually.
Yeah, good for him. I like it.
So, now we're down to Old Town Ink and Black Cobra and their full-color tattoos. Describe them.
Black Cobra's master canvas in color is some kind of a falcon holding a torch. There's some autumn leaves around and a full moon. And it is absolutely gorgeous. It is so pretty.
Yeah, I love the colors. It's really vibrant. There's a lot of great contrast. The judges were a little unhappy with the bottom wing. They felt it didn't point out far enough or something.
They felt it wasn't anatomically perfect, but you know what?
I don't know that they're necessarily wrong about that.
It reads as a wing, it's attached to the bird, and it goes down on the guy's butt.
I like looking at that tattoo. It's fun.
Yeah.
And then Old Town Ink did...
They did a Chinese-style dragon.
Or possibly a Japanese-style dragon. I wasn't clear.
I think it's Japanese. Okay. I think it's Japanese, because they have them outside of a Wajimaya.
Yeah. Now, I really like this dragon's head. If you zoom in on the head, it is great and very appealing.
But it blends in with the body.
Yeah. There isn't...
I'm not sure where the head is attached. Is this the neck that goes down and then attaches to the body that goes around here?
Yeah, the anatomy is a little iffy on it, and I wish the head were not over something else that's the same color.
Yeah.
I will say I love the color choices. The blue and yellow very much match what you got in 1980s comic books.
Yeah, it's very much the Marvel Comics 1980s blue and yellow.
This could be Fin Fang Foom for all I know.
Oh, maybe it is. Let's pretend it is.
All right.
And their tattoo goes down pretty far. It goes down the guy's butt and halfway down his thigh.
Which is fun.
The dragon's tail. Which means that we get to spend a lot of time looking at a gentleman's butt during judging.
Yeah, there was a time when they would have blurred these butts out. The live tattoos were all on women who I believe were models, and they were all on the women's thighs so they could show off some leg.
They were all on attractive women.
Yeah, but that was not the case on the giant tattoos. And I gotta say, all of them, really impressive. Why is that blurred out up there? That's not even close to what they should be blurring out.
That's his butt crack.
All right.
You can't have the kids seeing a butt crack.
So the winner was Old Town Ink, and I really thought Black Cobra could have taken it.
I felt that Black Cobra deserved it more because I like their tattoos more.
Yeah.
But that's really just me being liking birds more than Chinese dragons.
Yeah.
Or perhaps Japanese dragons.
They did give us a preview of the next season, which is called The Return of the Masters. And we immediately said, we don't care about your stupid masters.
No.
But what they're doing is they're bringing back two guys to be mentors of teams, which sounds like they're just going back to the weird Peck versus Nunez.
Yeah, but the Peck versus Nunez didn't work because when your teams are headed up by the guys who are judging,
yeah,
it's really a conflict of interest.
Yeah, and I feel like they abandoned that gimmick really quick in that season. Like, they got a couple episodes in and were like, let's just tattoo whatever you want and we'll just see who wins at the end.
And the guys who were coming back as masters, I didn't really remember that well.
Yeah.
So, okay, whatever.
We also got to see a preview of Ink Master Angels.
Which I kind of want to watch.
This is three women, including the one recently who has the really tattooed throat. Including Tattoo Baby, which I'm kind of glad of. I don't hate her, I'm just sick of her.
She was super annoying.
And she was on like three seasons in a row. So, Ink Master Angels. These three women go from town to town, and then it's not super clear.
I think that what happens is local tattoo artists go head-to-head in a six-hour tattoo, and the winner of that gets to take on the tattoo angels.
Okay. So it's
one of the tattoo angels.
There's some kind of Iron Chef style thing here that I like. We don't know who's judging it. It also looked like they're trying to ramp up the emotion where people tell their touching stories about their sick kids or something. But we didn't see anybody shouting at each other about how they weren't worthy of being there or anything. So that's a
big plus right there.
It looks like it might be a better tone of a show.
Yeah.
And we also saw a preview of Waco, which is not strictly relevant to this podcast, but it was part of Dave Navarro explaining that Spike TV is going to become the Paramount Network. But don't worry, the Paramount Network will still have plenty of Ink Master.
And other shows like it.
Yeah.
Including Waco, which I'm curious about because I kind of want to see whose side the movie is on.
Yeah. I like the idea of Waco just because they were able to build a building that looks a lot like the compound, and they can put it out in the middle of nowhere in Texas, just like it actually was, which means that when it comes time for the climactic episode,
when they burn it down, they can just burn down the building they built.
That is some Roger Corman-style realism.
That's right.
And then,
if a Roger Corman-style realism, they would just build the building in miniature out of cardboard.
And then use it for four movies in a row. But the point is, I like the idea of actually burning a building down, and they're going to get to do that. So that is Ink Master. It is over. We're probably going to check in on Ink Master Angels, and we'll see about this other season when it eventually comes up. Speaking of season finales, The Great Food Truck Race.
It's not really that great.
It is the greatest food truck race I know of.
Okay, fair enough. I'm willing to give you that.
Although there's not enough racing in it, in my opinion.
So we're down to two teams. Those teams are Braised in the South and Mr. Po' Boy.
That is correct. And I was getting to really like Mr. Po' Boys. I was still rooting for them, partly because all three of the Braised in the South team are exactly the same guy.
They are. They all look alike, dress alike, and sound alike.
And I got nothing against that guy, but it's not as interesting as Mr. Po' Boys, which has three different people on the team.
Yeah.
However, because we just saw Mr. Po' Boys win the Great Food Truck Rally, which gave them $10,000, I'm less worried about them winning $50,000 on this show.
I think they'll be fine either way. So, today's challenge is seafood. You're going to have to park your food truck somewhere. We'll bring you a bunch of seafood.
Shellfish, specifically. Shellfish. Which is bad for Mr. Po' Boys because their main chef is Cedric, who is allergic to seafood.
Right.
But on the other hand, they make Po' Boys, so the first one, they get delivered a
whole
bunch.
They get shrimps, and they just make those shrimp po' boys that everyone loved last time, and they got it made.
Let's make some shrampies. I'm going to be saying shrampies a lot. It's from The Good Place, and it is fun to say. Give it a try.
Shrampies?
Yeah! There you go.
I like them shrampies.
Yeah, you do. Now, in this episode, I noticed Tyler Florence is literally phoning in his host gig.
Yeah, literally.
He rarely shows up. Also, I feel like in at least some previous seasons of this show, there was a race aspect where at least in the last episode, it was earn $300, then drive your truck to here as fast as you can. And they're not
doing that at all. Right, whoever arrives first gets it. Yeah, it's probably because of insurance.
Yeah. And you don't really want people who just learned how to drive a food truck.
Racing them?
Yeah.
Agreed.
So, the first stupid twist, pedicabs. And I was really down on this.
You were.
What they said was, shut down your truck, sell from a pedicab for the next couple hours. And I was like, this is dumb and gimmicky.
So they took two very different approaches, which I thought was interesting. Braised in the South just made a bunch of tacos, stacked them in there, and said $5 for a taco, and just rode around town yelling at people, buy a taco for $5.
Wrapped them all in foil. They found one of those rolling bars where people have to pedal. Pulled up next to him and sold like five tacos, just tossed them up
while they were racing with the rolling bar. So that was fun.
That actually started to convince me maybe food pedicabs is a good idea because now you can go chase people down instead of hoping they come to where your truck is.
That's true. Mr. Po' Boy took a completely different approach wherein they just threw a bunch of ingredients in the pedicab and said, we'll make the sandwiches to order.
They did reduce the ingredients, so it was just chicken and bacon and bread. And while they were not as nimble, they did have the benefit of people standing at their pedicab while they made the sandwich, which kind of helped build a crowd. so they didn't have to move around as much.
Yes.
And both of them, after a little bit, looked like they were doing pretty well.
They both, I think, sold out of food.
Yeah.
During their designated hours. So it's really just a matter of who got the most money.
Then they were told to move, and the next shellfish is not shrimpies, it is scallops.
Mr. Pole Boy freaked out about scallops.
What are we going to do? And then they realized...
And then someone, I don't remember which team member it was, but they're great, just said, everything's good on bread.
Yep. At this point, they realized, we're just a sandwich truck. So for the rest of the episode, whatever weird ingredient they were given, they said, all right, we're going to put that on the bread. We're going to use our spicy remoulade, lettuce, tomato.
It's a sandwich now.
And the other team has basically reduced their options down to, we're now a taco truck. Which, again, that is great. Whatever somebody gives you, you can put into a taco.
Yeah. Yep.
So now they're making scallop tacos, and there are scallop po' boys. What I really like...
Both of which sound delicious.
Yeah. But like, all of this food looked really good. What I liked here is that after they moved from the scallops, they had clams. Braised in the South, we keep being told, are trained chefs. And one of the chefs was explaining how to open clams. And they cut mid-sentence from him to Cedric, who is the cook on the
po' boy
truck. He's saying exactly the same thing in the same words. So just to let you know, Cedric, also a trained chef.
Yes.
A little handicapped in this episode because he is allergic to shellfish, but he knows what he's doing.
He can't eat them, but he can cook them. And that's what the important thing is, being able to cook a shellfish.
So everybody sold a whole bunch of stuff and was eventually brought to the final place where Tyler Florence read out the winner. He didn't read out the winner. They were each given briefcases to open.
And one had money in it and one did not.
Yeah.
It seemed kind of cruel.
And Braised in the South won.
Yeah.
Which, that seems fine. Like I said, I was kind of hoping for Mr. Po' Boys to win, but I happen to know they already won one of these TV shows, so I think they'll be okay. And that ended the Great Food Truck Race for another season. They will probably be back in like 3 years, taking everybody by surprise.
Yes, because we will have forgotten they existed. And then all of a sudden we'll turn on the TV, their food truck race.
That's the sweet spot for me, is a steady diet of reality shows I've forgotten existed. Like, if Work of Art suddenly popped up on the TiVo,
oh,
I would be,
man,
so
I
happy.
I would be so excited. That was a terrible show.
It wasn't a great show, but I really enjoyed it.
I did too.
The premise behind Work of Art is it's one of these shows, but instead of food trucks or fashion, it's art. And they're serious about it. You are supposed to be making actual art, but it's a reality show. So in one of the episodes, you are supposed to be making actual art, and your inspiration is this brand new Lexus.
Yeah.
So people had to ride around in a Lexus and then go sculpt something. And
or
there,
paint it.
There
or...
was one woman who found a way for every single entry to be a naked picture of herself.
It was amazing.
And the winners were always art school kids, because the real challenge of the show was not how good is your art, but how good is your artist's statement explaining why what you did is art.
How are you able to convince people that this is art? Oh, that Suck Dog guy was on there. He makes those cool action figures.
Yeah.
So a friend of mine just bought one of those.
Oh, hey.
So he's still around.
No, I really want that just to be the game, where they just assign you ridiculous art and you have to make up an explanation of why it's art. That was a great show. It had two seasons. It had an actual...
Did it have a second season?
I think
I only
it had
remember
two
that
seasons.
One. Yeah, that was a terrible show. I wish it would come back. It was amazing.
All right. Face-off game, face game.
Yay!
This was not a season finale, but it felt like a bigger episode than normal. All four contestants were former winners of Face-Off.
Right.
And it felt like it was supposed to be the first episode, because Mackenzie Westmore explained the concept a lot.
Uh-huh.
And we were...
The judges were V, Glenn, and Rick Baker.
They were introduced in that order, too, which felt more like we are being eased into the show.
Yeah.
Because, you know, here's V and Glenn, who you're used to, and Rick Baker, who's a special treat. Now that we've seen
a special treat.
Now that we've seen a lot of Game Face, we know that Rick is here every week.
Yeah.
So the contestants were... Take it.
Darla Eden, winner of season 8, a lady.
I don't remember her.
Sig Neutron. I don't remember what season he won.
He won season 11, but he was on a previous season.
Right, he won the All-Stars season. My notes just say Sig Neutron. Yay, Sig.
Yeah, everybody likes Sig. Sig is great.
Rashad Santiago, who was a season 6 winner.
I remember him. Winner. He had great hair, still does. It's gray.
He has a great silver mohawk.
Oh, a gray mohawk is the way to go, isn't it?
I think so.
I have gray hair.
I know.
And Nicole, who I actually remember.
I don't remember Nicole at all, but she seems nice.
She won
season 3.
She was the first female winner, which is a grand statement, but really, if it only took 3 seasons to have a female winner, that's
pretty good.
Yeah. So, the first round, ghost pirates, like in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right, like you're undead pirates. Which is an interesting thing, because V. Neil met Glenn Hetrick while filming one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies because he was an extra.
Yeah, he was one of them undead pirates, and she was in charge of the makeup.
Yeah.
And according to this interview we found, Glenn just kind of nosed up to her and said,
"You know, I do makeup." And they became friends, and now they have this empire of television. Yes. Yeah. The other thing we learned was that Stellan Skarsgård loved wearing the really heavy, heavy makeup that he had to wear when he was half covered with starfishes.
That makes sense. The way he played it, he was very beaten down.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And V looked a little rueful when she said that a lot of the pirates were CGI, but she got to do some work.
Yeah, she said, unfortunately, some of the pirates were CGI, but I still got to do some work.
So everybody got a pirate. The models came in already dressed as pirates.
Right, and you got a little note with your pirate saying how he had died.
There was a watery grave, which Nicole was super excited by, hanged by the magistrate for Rashad, left to rot on a rock for a Sig, and condemned to a cannonball fate.
Shot by a cannonball.
That is the usual cannonball fate. Now, I was not crazy about what Darla did for her cannonball. She decided to go with half of the face burned because she found a prosthetic that had half the face burned.
Hey, on the ground. We don't have a lot of time here.
And then she kind of made a half a cannonball and just embedded it in the chest. I was picturing something way more cannonball intensive with like a little crater in the face.
I was picturing the cannonball embedded in the face. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you can really do that because a cannonball would never embed in your face. It would take your whole head off. And B, that would involve a lot more sculpting and they do not have time for that crap.
Yeah. Rashad did some of that fun latex and paper towel effect to get, like, ligaments and stuff.
Right, for he wanted his guy to be someone who had rotted in the gibbet.
Yes.
And, yeah, I liked what he did. I was a little bit annoyed because in the final looks you could actually see a lot of the texture, the little square texture of the paper towel.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I felt like it looked like a Scooby-Doo ghost pirate.
Yeah.
But and I'm all for that.
If you think of this as being inspired by the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, then you're a lot more open to goofy effects.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can be more whimsical.
Now, Sig mostly just painted his guy purple.
Yeah.
Which was a shame, especially because he had the model we call Thor, who looks great as a pirate to begin with.
Yeah, Thor's the guy with the long blonde hair, looks great in a pirate outfit. And I felt like Sig was, I think that the clue wanted him to be mummified.
Yeah.
And Sig did not go in that direction.
Or maybe pecked away by seagulls or something.
Yeah.
He did this neat thing where he found a jaw and put it up on the forehead. And Rick Baker loves it when you do something besides just use a prosthetic the way it's supposed to be used.
Yeah, Rick said he did a great job of creating an original character. But that character did not look like it had been dried up on an island.
Yeah. Rashad.
Who else are we missing?
Rashad had a basic straightforward zombie pirate. He had to fake up a noose, which he didn't know how to tie, but he did a pretty good job there. Yeah. The rope did not look aged, and Glenn was unhappy that there weren't more ligature marks on the neck.
I think there should have been more ligature marks, and the neck should have been broken, but I'm... I'm sentimental.
I have a note here. Of course Glenn knows the word ligature.
Nicole was super excited because her pirate died in the water. And she's planning, and she wants to win this so she can have a pirate wedding.
I was very worried about that because I thought maybe she wanted a watery grave wedding.
Yeah.
But I think she actually wants a Pirates of the Caribbean
wedding. Yeah, that's what she said. And she did some interesting stuff in that she actually sculpted some barnacles on the prosthetic that she had.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a nice touch and very much sold it. I felt like the prosthetic was a little pointy and I thought it should be more rounded and bloated.
They don't have a lot of choices, though. I know. They basically have one large plastic bin of prosthetics, and you reach in there
and you grab what you can. You've got seconds to do it.
So Sig's paint job was not great, and he was sent home.
Yeah.
But I would like to point out what a good mood he was still in. He said it was great being here. It's great to make makeup. It's great competing against great people. And he left with a smile. And Ink Master, you see how much we still like Sig? How if I had a TV show or a movie,
I would get a tattoo from Sig.
Yeah. Whereas nobody on Ink Master is somebody you want touching you for six hours.
No.
So, round two. What's round two?
Round two, Legends of the Lost Worlds. They're each given an artifact from a lost world, and they have to make a character who would wield that artifact. Rashad got a scimitar from the Lost Kingdom of the Jinn, Iram.
That's D-J-I-N-N. He was probably hoping for a big muscular dude, which is kind of how you picture Jinns.
But he got a little slender lady.
Yep. Kind of painted her blue and magenta.
Blue and purple and gold. It was really beautiful.
It was.
Some of my favorite colors on that lady. Darla got the trident and was told that her kingdom is Atlantis, so she's going to do a fish lady.
Now, I would like to point out, Atlantis is supposed to be a city that then gets covered up by the waves. Like, I don't see why you would have a fish lady as your queen for just a continent before it gets covered by the waves. But I have convinced myself that perhaps the king of Atlantis carried a trident. And it is those stories that have been confused, so that's why we associate it with Poseidon. Sorry, go ahead.
I believe that their theory is that it's the sunken city of Atlantis, which is populated by fish people. That's what most people think.
But that's not the story.
It's not the story. You don't know the story.
I do know the story. Plato said so. There was a continent called Atlantis, and then it got covered.
It sank under the waves.
Yes.
Well, what's it doing today? It's home to fish people.
All right, fine. Anyway, she had some gills that she put on the lower neck and a big mouthpiece and a couple other things.
Orbital sockets.
Yeah.
And it looked great.
As soon as she put them on, she was like, oh, that's a lot of stuff. I'm way behind now.
But she caught up, and I thought she did great. Next up, someone.
Darla.
No, Darla was Atlantis.
Then Nicole.
Nicole.
Oh, yeah, Nicole.
Nicole had Agartha, the Kingdom of the Hollow Earth. And she was super excited. She's like, oh yeah, I'm going to make a badass queen of Agartha. She's going to be great. And then she got a male model.
She got the big muscular guy.
Wow.
And then she was trying to figure out how to put gems into him somehow. Eventually what she came up with was it looked like he had cracks in his head and there were gems underneath the skin. And she
kind of liked it.
Yeah. I liked the coloration a lot. There was a lot of golds and browns.
And reds.
And she had a cool expression. Like, he looked haughty.
Yeah, she specifically made him look haughty.
And
she did some stripes on him, some tribal war paint, which covered up some of the edges. I thought it was a good strategy, and I liked it.
Rick Baker's main comment to her was, she had these horizontal stripes on the cheekbones. If she'd added one on the nose, she could have covered up another edge.
Yeah.
Which I really like that these experts part of what makes them experts is they know how to do quick things to cover up mistakes and stuff. Right.
During the judging, Rick Baker said that the gin lady, who was dark purple and blue, was too dark, and that it clashed with the costume, and also he had chosen a pretty stupid wig. We all agree on the stupid wig.
That was the first thing he did, too. He was like, I'm going to use this long, black, stringy wig. And then it was super distracting, and it covered up a bunch of stuff.
Which was a shame. The paint job, well, I really loved the paint job, but I don't think it would have worked for a movie because it was so dark.
It was pretty dark. He did one really cool thing I liked where the hands were blue, and then he painted the fingertips red. And I thought it was a really neat effect.
Yeah, it was a cool effect.
Unfortunately.
But he did go home.
Rashad went home. That left us with Nicole and Darla.
Round three. Enter the Star Wars universe.
They're supposed to make a bounty hunter from a randomly chosen Star Wars planet. And this is interesting because there were six planets on the wheel. There is Tatooine. We all know Tatooine.
It's a desert planet.
It's in all the movies. Almost all the movies. Hoth, that is an ice planet. Dagobah, that is a swamp planet. Up to now, these are planets we're used to, although we don't really know that much about the inhabitant, like the natives of that planet.
Not really.
Tatooine, we know, has Sarlacc pits. Hoth has Tauntauns and an abominable snowman.
Well, I think Dubaks are native to Tatooine.
Oh, they could be. Okay, I'll give you that. And Dagobah has a monster under the swamp and a haunted tree.
And there were some other kind of, but what were the other planets?
There
were things I had not heard of.
Gand. Now, Gand turns out to be Knights of the Old Republic 2. It is a mist.
Oh, please.
It is a mist planet. It's full of poison mists.
Yeah.
Mist planets are very popular in video games because they mean you don't have to render things.
Yeah, that's probably true.
There was Edu.
Edu.
That is the rain planet from Rogue One.
Yeah, it's the planet that the movie starts on with all the mountains and the fields and the craggy-looking people.
Yeah, and there is Mustafar, and that turns out to be the volcano planet where Anakin gets chopped up by Obi-Wan.
Oh, yeah.
And then for some reason Darth Vader builds his castle right there, which is a weird move, Anakin.
Like, yeah,
what
that's
are you doing?
A little creepy.
Now, Darla got Edu, that's rain planet, and Nicole got Tatooine. We all know what Tatooine is.
So,
at this point, while the judges were talking, Rick Baker mentioned something about how, I know a little something about Star Wars. Now, here's how good this guy's career is. I didn't know he made so much of the cantina faces.
Oh, yeah, he's actually in the cantina guy that's playing the saxophone. Look at the bassoon or whatever.
He is Figrin Dan of Figrin Dan and the Modal Nodes.
Yep.
He is also the guy with the little triangular head that you see really briefly.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a makeup artist on the second unit of Star Wars. So when he's looking at these guys who are trying to make bounty hunters, he's thinking, man, I remember doing that.
Yeah, it probably makes him happy.
It did make him happy. He loves watching people do makeup.
Does do that. So Nicole, who's doing Tatooine, grabbed a cowl, which we've actually seen used on other creatures in this series. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And the face she chose was kind of a horned toad lizard face.
Yeah, it was a very bumpy face and a very smooth bulbous cowl. And they didn't go together perfectly.
But they were painted beautifully. She did a great job of painting. They were browns and earth colors. It looked very deserty, but it was kind of shaped like the newscaster on Futurama. Or
Morbo!
Or the Metal Luna Mutant.
Mutant. it did have a angry expression baked into it, which is fine for a bounty hunter, but the model was able to snarl a little extra. I always like seeing that there is some range of facial expression with these masks.
Right. Darla did this awesome rock monster.
It was very blue and kind of...
It was a super dark navy blue-black. It had big goggles and a hoodie.
Yeah.
And a hood, which helped a lot because...
Right up to the last second, it didn't look like it was close to being finished.
Right. And she put some goggles on it, put a hood over its head, and threw some white, did a few little white highlights over the black to make it really pop. And it was gorgeous, and it was my favorite.
Yep, it really looked great.
And it also won.
Yep. Another really fun episode of Game Face.
Yeah, that was a great episode. I liked it a lot. I liked all the creature designs. Usually there's some that I hate.
I liked all the designs. I liked all the designers. They didn't really have time to be friends, but there was a few moments where people could call out, "How you doing over there?"
Yeah, Nicole and Darla clearly are friends in real life.
Yeah.
Because they checked in on each other a lot while they were working, which I thought was sweet.
They hugged at the end, and this wasn't like Christian's "F you." This was, "I'm so happy for you. Congratulations, you won." There's one more television show to talk about.
The one we just watched?
It is Project Runway.
Project Runway.
Project Runway. This is the best podcast ever.
All right. So what do you got? It starts off with them showing what happened last week, which I've already forgotten.
Yeah. This week is a JCPenney challenge, which I will say, although JCPenney is not high fashion, it is at least relevant to the idea of clothes. This isn't Red Robin. They don't have to go really far out of their way to connect making clothes to JCPenney.
Right. Now, I grew up in a different era, as you might know, the Victorian one.
Cenozoic?
Something like that. And when I think of JCPenney clothes, my first thought is not great designer clothes. My first thought is dowdy things your fourth grade teacher would wear.
Yeah, at one point, I think Claire Butendorp is trying to do some concepting, and she says, "What is the JCPenney woman going to want to wear?" And we agreed the answer is mom jeans.
Yeah, make some mom jeans. They love that stuff.
Like, I recently have lost some weight. I'm thinking of getting some jeans that fit. There's a chance JCPenney is going to be involved.
Yeah. So
we got to see some menswear, and some designers were very excited. Brendan was super excited because he makes menswear, although, honestly, the way Brendan designs, I don't see why he cares what shape the person is inside.
Really, he makes big bags. He makes clothes bags.
Immaculate clothes bags. But
clothes bags.
Come on. But no, we're only showing you menswear so that you can make women's wear out of these fabrics.
Right.
Now, I didn't know women's wear and men's wear fabrics were that different. Did you?
I did not either.
Apparently they are.
Okay.
In fact, nobody has names for the fabrics they use in this episode. When it's women's wear, they all say, you know, "I'm velvet" or whatever. They say, but
I think that the plaid fabric was flannel.
They called it shirt fabric. And there was a lot of, "I'm using this fabric."
Yeah. Yeah.
"I'm using denim." That wasn't denim. That was chambray at best.
Yes. Agreed.
So first, two people are assigned one fabric. Kenya and Kentaro get a fabric. Brandon and Sean get a fabric. Blah, blah, blah. But it's a team challenge. And those are not the teams.
You can't be on a team with someone who has the same fabric you do.
You have to make two cohesive looks, and the people on your team have to have different fabrics, which is a good rule. So Kentaro goes first. He picked Brandon.
Right. Amy picked Kenya.
Claire picked Sean. Nobody's surprised.
You know, earlier in the episode, Claire said that she felt like she was in a rut because she wasn't making any good clothes. I think that rut is named Sean.
Yeah.
Sean is dragging her down so much.
Then Margarita picked Botany, and Ayana was left with Michael. The only other interesting things about the picking, everybody's worried about Kentaro and Brandon because they're both really good, and their aesthetics kind of mesh.
Yeah, they really do. It's weird.
I was thinking they might have a problem because neither of them seem that, like, explicitly verbal. But they both respected each other's aesthetics a lot. And they made two looks that were super, super cohesive.
Several teams have said they're going to do oversized shirts or shirt dresses, which was a little worrying. But it had to be inspired by men's fashion, so what are you going to do? And my next note is all in caps, with a whole bunch of exclamation points. Would you like to know what it says?
I would love to know what it says.
Oh my god, it's Swatch's birthday!
Yep,
he has a little crown and a cake.
They went to Mood, and it was Swatch's 10th birthday. That dog is getting up there. And Once they got back to the workroom, Amy spent the rest of the episode wearing one of the t-shirts with Happy Birthday Swatch on it.
Yes, it had a picture of him wearing a crown. It was super cute.
It was super cute. So, one of the big prizes that they kept wanting us to care about is that the winning look was going to be on JCPenney's website after the episode.
Tonight!
I don't care. I cannot imagine caring. Yeah. It's JCPenney's website.
So, one of the
website.
Things that was starting to happen this week is that Claire finally seems to be getting a little bit tired of having to make all of Sean's clothes.
Yep. Even
you could see her just getting more and more annoyed with it.
Even in a team challenge, you're supposed to make your own garment at least a little. And Claire never gets to make her own garment.
Well, she made a garment.
Yeah.
And it was really hideous. Like, it was like that thing Cha-Cha sent out in the first episode. It was bad.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to skip past most of the sewing. People are getting annoyed with the twins.
Uh-huh.
But some teams get along, some teams don't, whatever.
Amy and Kenya get along at first, but as they get more stressed out, they kind of get annoyed with each other. But it's okay.
Amy talks a lot about how she's going to be trusting Kenya's vision for Flair. And then when Kenya makes something, Amy's like, ugh, I hate that. And then yeah. Kenya's like, well, I hate what you're making. And that didn't go super well.
And then they
well.
End up making their own things.
Yeah. And, so here's what got sent up. Catwalk.
Ayana and Michael made a hospital gown.
Made two hospital gowns.
One of them has a blazer.
Yeah. Ayana had some dark pants that couldn't really be seen because there was a white hospital gown on top of it.
Yeah.
I did not care for the shape of either of their things. Michael had a blazer over his hospital gown, which was a little better.
Yeah. Kenya and Amy, they made something that looked kind of like a 1960s or 70s flight attendant outfit.
Which I don't know why we're mad at that, because it looked hot.
It did look nice, but it looked boring. It looked like something you could already buy at JCPenney's.
Yes.
And they made a pantsuit that would only have looked appropriate on David Bowie during the cocaine years, yeah. I'm thinking.
It's light blue. It has a weird, weird neckline shaped like a capital U.
It's got a peplum, and it's got bell-bottom pants covered with buttons.
And big pointy lapels for no reason.
Big pointy lapels.
That's the one Amy made, and wow, Amy.
It's tragic.
I was picturing you as, like, the arbiter of taste in this season.
I would describe that outfit as a rock and roll suicide.
Nice.
Kentaro and Brandon, they did a streetwear look that kind of played off of gym wear. They had a short jacket made out of the plaid fabric and a long jacket with a hood made out of the plaid fabric. It was fine.
It was super cohesive. I will say this about Brandon. I am super sick of the random straps. They're not even attached to anything anymore.
Stop complaining about those straps.
Make him stop doing them.
I'll try.
Do it.
Okay, I will. I promise.
Thank you. What did the twins do? Yeah, explain this.
Oh, the twins did ugliest things ever.
That's not a lot of detail. Do you have anything else?
Well, one of their models was Lyris, who's the largest of the models, and she's absolutely gorgeous.
And a great model, too.
And so what they did was they made her a dress that looks like, I'm not kidding here, it looks like an oversized sweatshirt that someone has pinned up the side and then sewn the side together so that it's form-fitting.
That was Sean's look. Sean spent the entire episode making Claire
make that look for
her. Yeah. Like, Sean, it looks like she completely locks up at the idea of a woman who's not shaped like a stick, so she refuses to even consider what might look good on such a person.
Even though her sister is desperately saying, well, don't worry about fitting it like she's plus size, worry about fitting it like she's a woman who wants to look sexy. That does not get through. She does not compute.
I mean, is it that hard to take a model with enormous hooters and do a look that says, look at these enormous hooters?
Apparently it is, because they took some gray long underwear fabric and made a sweatshirt out of it. But
That's the thing. Although it's officially Sean's look, that's the good look.
Yeah, because let me try and explain to you the nonsense
you can
that Claire sent down the runway.
You can describe it to me. I defy you to explain it.
Okay, so the top part was a long t-shirt
Well, that sounds fine.
One half, the left half, was made out of gray long underwear fabric.
Cozy.
The right half was made out of hideous green satin that looked like it should have been suit lining. It had, they both had, both sides had short sleeves because they were a t-shirt, but the green satin side, it had a ruffle around the sleeve, a big ugly ruffle.
That sounds festive. You seem angry at it.
Then, underneath that, they had some jeans that were not hemmed.
And looked terrible from the back.
Like, yeah, these from were not, the back, they looked like the, a poopy diaper.
Those not a good jeans.
They were not good jeans.
Which, again, it's possible Claire could have done good jeans had she been allowed to make good jeans.
Yes, exactly. And let's see, what else was there? Oh, there was a belt that was made out of sleeves. It was as though you had cut a sleeve off of a shirt. Both sleeves off the shirt, sewn them together in the back, and wrapped them around and tied them loosely over the area of the crotch. It was, there were not in belt loops. It wasn't near the waist of the pants.
The judges
and
asked,
and it was hilarious.
The judges asked why, and Claire said, with every sign of being sincere, maybe she gets cold.
I said, why does she have extra sleeves? And Claire said, maybe she gets cold.
Now, we'd seen this earlier when Tim was going through during his mentor thing. Their idea was that the sleeves were going to be tied around the bust. You know, one sleeve on one side, the other sleeve on the other, the way the t-shirt was half and half. And Tim just stared at them and then held it up the way they were telling him it was going to look. And he just said, look at this.
He did. He was so he was so upset. He was aesthetically wounded, as was I, and any right-thinking person.
As was Zach. Zach Posen's comments on this look included trashy, uninspired, banal. Oh, those were all three right in a row.
Yeah, that was one sentence. Just trashy, uninspired, and banal.
He also said, your model holds it with such grace. You're very lucky. I think that was actually about Sean's, not Claire's.
Yeah, that was about the hideous sweatshirt dress.
And we still have Botany and Margarita.
Yes, Margarita. Why do I have the word Calthea written down there?
I cannot imagine.
I don't either.
Botany made a velvet dress, which I thought was the only thing that actually looked like it could be sold on JCPenney.com.
I thought it was a super cute dress.
Like, Kentaro and Brandon's thing was fine, but way too complicated for JCPenney.
Right. Margarita made a shirt dress that was kind of asymmetrical. It was weird.
The judges liked it
The judges loved it, and I could see that it was a really good thought-out design, but I could not get past the fact that the fabric that they used was that same gray stripy fabric that they made people in death camps dress in.
I'm sure that's an accident.
I know that's an accident, but it just looked like that to me, and it just kept it kept bothering me.
It didn't look much like that to me. It had a pattern. It wasn't strictly striped.
It reminded me of that.
Margarita,
like old mattress ticking.
Margarita won and declared it to be Margarita time, which I can't decide how I feel about as a if she said it more often, I think I'd like it as a catchphrase. If that's the only time she says it, I don't know.
I don't think she was even thinking about the drink at the time. I think that was just her being excited.
The bottom team was the twins.
Oh, they were so awful. And the judges couldn't figure out which one to send home because they were both so awful. And as they said, you guys do so much of each other's work, we don't know if either one of you has any talent.
Well,
so
it's what not quite what they said.
That's what I said.
They're responding to the twins saying, we work in a collaborative setting.
Yes.
I think I could say that like one of the twins. We worked in a collaborative setting.
Yes.
They overpronounce things, which
definitely.
As I've said, I like that they overpronounce things.
A friend who is a seamstress, and she has that same exact accent.
I like people who have thought of their entire sentence and then thought about how to deliver it and then tell you that sentence word for word properly. I got no problem with that. I think it's fun. I am sick of the twins.
But not because of their linguistic skills.
So the judges announce they're going to go head-to-head in a one-hour challenge right now when the fabric is in the workroom and they can't help each other.
Right.
Which, even if the twins were excellent, you know the producers wanted a head-to-head challenge with them at some point.
Right, exactly. Even if they had both been really good designers, this would have happened. But the fact that they have shown us nothing, oh, it's going to be painful.
So it is a to be continued. And
boo.
The twins do not like this.
We do see some scenes of next week's episode in which we see both of them crying and hugging each other and saying, but I love you so much.
Well, it's going to be awful for them. It's going to be worse for Shawn because so far on this show, she has not done great under time pressure and hasn't done anything by herself. So,
well, when I look at the clothes that are from their clothing line that they create,
yeah,
it is mostly things appliqued onto other clothing.
That's fair. It still looks good.
Yeah, they do great applique work, but I don't think they make the clothing they applique onto. I think they buy jackets wholesale and then make them theirs, which is completely legitimate, but it's not going to get you a prize on Project Runway.
Yeah. So it looks like next week, one of the twins is going to go home. It's going to be Shawn. I'm saying that for two reasons. One, from what we've seen on the show, Shawn doesn't have the technical skills that Claire does. Mm-hmm. And also, at the beginning of the show, we saw previews of a cheating scandal at some point, and Claire is in a lot of those shots, and we haven't seen it yet, so obviously she survives. Good job, preview makers. You're idiots. And that catches us up with all of the television
shows.
Yeah,
high five!
Ooh, good one.
Ow.
We will be back next week with more super hot television show action. That's
Halloween
what we say,
Wars.
Right? Ooh, Halloween Wars
Halloween Wars is starting! It's the season! Sorry, I get a little excited about Halloween Wars.
Spooky.